Support of KQED's podcasts is provided by Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. Public radio programs and podcasts are available on demand with the Stitcher app. Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. The Stitcher app is available at Stitcher.com.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly look at California politics.
Such as it is.
Man, you know, I think I'm going to have to get a different intro for this podcast because I'm not really sure we look at California politics except the budget politics under the Capitol Dome anymore.
It'll change in October of 2010 when we're talking about Meg Whitman's, you know, teenage discretions or
so
whatever.
So you're predicting Meg Whitman will be the nominee?
No, I'm just predicting that I'll be talking about Meg Whitman as a teenager in October.
All right, good. That was a total straight man line. I gave you that one perfectly. I'm John Myers from KQED. That is Anthony York, the ever-quotable editor of Capital Weekly.
God forbid.
Okay, so we're sitting here on Thursday the 16th. You'll get this podcast on Friday the 17th, early in the morning.
And how's your budget, John?
Well, I was going to say, you'll get it early in the morning on Friday the 17th, unless there's a budget deal today on the 16th, in which case we would have to do something different. But, the odds feel like they keep going down for something soon, or I don't know what the hell is going on.
I like to think,
solve the whole thing for me. Explain it all.
Last week in this very spot, we were very uncheery about the progress of budget negotiations. Right?
Uncheery. I'm not sure that's a word. Gloomy. No. Maybe.
You have your word. I have mine. Okay. That's fine. But I think we painted a pretty pessimistic picture.
Go ahead. Thank you, Peter Piper.
Thank you. That's what I was getting at, about the budget negotiations. And then magically on Friday, they seemed to kind of kickstart last Friday, the, help me here, 10th.
Yes.
They seemed to find a new momentum, which has carried us up through Wednesday. It seemed like we were getting closer, closer, closer. And then now we've hit a little snag. But hey, you know, we've come this far.
Hit a snag, run out of gas, sputtering.
Or are digging in for a long fight over education spending.
Yeah, I mean, let's just go ahead and just delve right into this ugly pile of stuff. we seem to be making all this progress, but we're talking about more than one thing. I mean, it is safe to say when you talk to people in the building, you talk to lawmakers, you talk to staff, there are a few issues that are not, as the Capitol parlance would be, locked down. So there are a few moving parts still in a deal over the $25 billion deficit. Notice I'm not calling it 26 because that included a reserve.
But at least 25 is a number now the Democrats agree on. They blame the governor for it being 25, but they're in the ballpark.
So there are a few different moving parts. But none of them are going to get as much attention, at least right now, as the education squabble.
Right, because education takes up 40 to 50% of the state budget.
Yeah. So you are the new education expert for the Capital Notes podcast.
God,
you
help
are
us
our so. Proposition 98 correspondent, Anthony York.
Do I have to speak English when I'm speaking Prop 98, though? That's the trick.
I don't know. Maybe we could do it in pig Latin. You could do the whole thing.
Okay. Elway. Ense uye. No, okay, that's about it.
I'm the one who set you up for that. Okay, so we're having a Prop 98 battle. I'm going to let you explain it, but I think for a layman, the bottom line here is trying to determine how much supplemental cash schools will get after the bad economy that we've been in recent times, and what it means for the future, not just the immediate deficit deal.
I think that is an important piece of this. We're not talking about anything that will have any impact
immediately,
or as long as Arnold Schwarzenegger is governor. We're talking about 3 to 5 years down the line and the implications for future education funding. Essentially, what the issue is, best I understand, I had a long sit down with the speaker's staff just today over this, is whether or not we can build a constitutional wall around a promise that the governor is making to repay schools about $11 billion. And this would be money that would be repaid over time, only when revenues pick up and the state economy picks up again. But what Democrats and the teachers unions want to avoid is a situation where the governor now promises, oh, yeah, we'll pay this money back to schools. Sure, no problem. And then when it comes time to pay the bill, a new governor can say, nope, we're not doing it. So what the Democrats want, they want a constitutional guarantee. They want to reinterpret the Constitution in statute.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They want to build a you called it a constitutional wall to make sure that this money gets paid. But it's a constitutional wall that would be built with statutory mortar,
or as Democrats would call it,
into a brick lane thing.
As Democrats would call it, clarifying language.
Right. But I mean, but seriously, but that is a key issue that they think they can make this new. Well, they can clarify 98 through statute passed by the legislature, signed by a governor, and not by going back to the voters to modify Prop 98, which is in the state constitution. And that's a huge sticking point because the governor is now saying, you can't do it except for the voters. I'm not going to do this by statute.
And I think if you pull back, the real issue here is
let's just talk about the politics.
In English, is that if there was mutual trust and a guarantee that Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to be in office, and if there was enough trust among the legislative leaders that everything was going to be paid back, that would be one thing. But there's not. And so I think what the Democrats and education groups are concerned about is an empty promise from the governor to get, oh, yeah, we're going to repay the schools, not a problem. And then when it comes time to pay the bill in 2012 or 2013, when the state economy picks up again, that somebody else, another governor and another set of legislative leaders might have something different to say about it. And that really is the issue, is the governor on paper is willing to pay back, to promise to pay back the schools at a future date. And that promise basically is not enough for the Democrats right now. They want a bill or a statute that interprets the Constitution that will guarantee that money gets paid back. They want a pinky swear with sugar on top and whatever else.
I like the pinky swear. You could just leave it at that. Okay. That's trying to see the governor's pinky and someone else's pinky swear. But one of the reasons that we're having to do this, or that we think we have to do this, is because the supplemental money for schools, which is total about $11 billion, about $9.5 billion in the year that just ended, and a little bit of make-good money from the year before that. But the problem, one of the reasons we're having to do this is because we were in such bad economic conditions. We were in a situation that Prop 98 had never been tested in.
Right.
It had never been put in. I don't want to use the word test because that confuses people with Prop 98. But Prop 98 had never existed in an environment like we've just gone through. And so there has been a long dispute about how Prop 98 should operate in that kind of environment.
And it's about the intent. Essentially, Prop 98 is a formula to compute a guarantee for schools, right? It was passed by voters in 1988.
It's a set of formulas.
Right. And right now we're in such an uncharted economic waters that our revenues have plunged so far, so fast, that the formulas have gone haywire.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now behaving and spitting out numbers that nobody had anticipated. And now there's a fight over the interpretation of what those numbers are, what they mean, what the intent was.
And as a matter of fact, I mean, we're hearing that the numbers, I love this term, when it was said that the numbers keep bouncing around. But as the data keeps coming in, we keep bouncing around between one part of Prop 98 and another part of Prop 98. If you know the stuff, you know, the notion that we're bouncing around between a test one and a test three year.
Right.
But we don't have final numbers on the 2008-2009 fiscal year yet.
Right.
We haven't gotten a June 2009 revenue report from the State Department of Finance. So we are still kind of figuring this out. And I guess what the point is that if all of that was set, that would be one thing. But what we're doing here is saying it doesn't really matter where that all comes out. Let's just agree on what we're going to do before we have all that data.
Right. And that was,
which I think is a problem, but
and to rewind, I mean, if you go back to May 19th and the special election, this is exactly, I mean, this problem was not unanticipated.
Yeah.
And in fact,
this was Prop 1B.
This is what Prop 1B was all about, was anticipating this problem. And it was a constitutional amendment that would have solved this problem. And now that Prop 1B has gone down, and the numbers have gone down along with it, the revenue numbers. There's a fight over the specifics.
Here. Interesting question here. I don't have any intel on this, but you're the man about the Capitol. All of the lawmakers who opposed the measures on the special election, largely Republicans, right. You know, who said they wouldn't vote for them. I think the new Republican leader in the Senate, Dennis Hollingsworth, was one of those people who said he didn't support them. Are those people who can get behind this education money deal here? I mean, because if you opposed Prop 1B, then how can you support this? It's almost the same thing.
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, and I think if you parse some of the comments coming from the Assembly Republican side, from Sam Blakesley, the Assembly Republican leader, what he's been saying, he's been sort of parroting the governor here, saying, let's deal with this year. Let's make sure we're not going to concern ourselves with the out year. We're not going to get caught up on this constitutional question. Well, that's all well and good, but the Democrats are saying, no. We're not signing off until we have a guarantee and a deal. And so it really is, you know, even though, right, we're bleeding to death, we're on fire, whatever gruesome analogy you want to use for what's going on to the state, the real fight is over what's going to happen in 3-4 years down the line. And I think that is the major obstacle, the major hang-up over the budget negotiations right now.
So here we are. We're sitting here fighting over the education stuff. It is not the only thing, as I said a few minutes ago, that has not been fully locked down. I mean, the Democratic leadership believed as of Wednesday night that when you set aside this education thing, they were really only a few hundred million dollars apart in concept on most of everything else in the deal, which I think, you know, was to show, look how far we've come, but we've got this thing. Of course, this thing is huge. I mean, this is not – we shouldn't try to downplay this in any way. But I think the other big part that is not nailed down that we would be remiss not to talk about, because it is really important to other interest groups that have power around here, is the local government money. Is the proposal to take about $3 billion in some way, shape, or form out of money that now sits with local governments, bring it into the state, help balance the budget.
Right.
There are multiple plans that are still sitting out there. I'm about to. There's a plan to borrow money from Prop 1A, the local government money, which is property tax money that goes to the locals, and to take money from HUDA, which is local, basically the gas tax revenues that go to the locals.
The highway users tax account, I believe.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. HUDA. I like saying HUDA, though.
HUDA thunk it.
HUDA. Nice. Very nice. Yeah. You're getting this broadcasting thing down. So that's one option. There's also an option on the table about redevelopment agencies and effectively extending the life of redevelopment agencies who are sitting on a pot of cash in exchange for a part of that pot of cash to help balance the state's budget.
$1.3
billion. Yeah. And so these are really controversial issues with local officials, and this plays a big part in the budget negotiations because Republicans have been pretty hesitant to do some of this local government planning here for several weeks, even several months.
As have Democrats. I mean, you know.
You hear a lot from Republicans, I guess I'm saying. But, yeah, that's not to say they're the only ones.
Well, I mean, the Democrats didn't want to do the Prop 1A borrowing, which they're – and the interesting thing is the cleanest thing, the easiest, the most constitutionally or legally pure thing to do would be to borrow the $2 billion from local government under Prop 1A. That would be the easy thing. The HUDA funds, these local transit funds, which is what, about $1.6 billion?
Yeah.
Roughly. You know, I've talked to a lot of local officials who are pretty confident that, I mean, they have a legal opinion that that the grab of those funds by the state is unconstitutional.
Right. And illegal. They're ready to take them to court.
And so, you know, One of the larger questions, and this is a perfect example of what's going on throughout the budget, is whether or not people are scoring savings, whether budget negotiators are scoring savings that they know aren't real. I mean, if you talk to the local government folks, they seem pretty confident that if the legislature and the governor agree on a plan that takes these local transit funds, that the locals are going to get that money back through the courts. And so 5-6 months from now, however long that those court cases take to play out, you're going to have a brand new $1.6 billion hole in the budget. And so guess what? You're going to be back negotiating this thing again. And so and I think that this is a much larger question about the budget deal in general, is how much of it...
Well, the budget process even, not just this deal.
Well, or I'll say pillars or elements of a potential deal, is how much of it is real. I mean, you've got things that are scored as bringing revenue into the state, like a partial sale of the state compensation insurance fund.
Right.
Which, look, I mean...
Which no one will oppose because they know it's a lot easier to score as a savings,
right,
which is what you're talking about.
And you know, there was talk, Tim Hurt in the Ventura County Star had a piece this week that the lottery discussion is now back in play. And
yeah.
So here's, again, scored savings that probably aren't real. And past budgets have had a lot of this money that, because technically a budget has to be balanced, right, at least when it's introduced. And so you have these things that are able on paper to be scored as savings or revenue into the state that in reality are never going to materialize. And so already you're hearing questions of, okay, we're going to get this deal sometime this month, sometime in July. When are we going to have to do this again? It's not going to be June. It's going to be October.
Well, and this kind of is a way for us to back out into kind of the politics of this and the things that maybe elected officials in the Capitol don't want us to talk about. But the governor's...
You mean those pictures? No? No.
And,
that's not
and,
what you mean.
And now we've stopped totally.
Okay.
No. I wanted to talk about Huda. No,
Huda.
I keep saying that because our intern, Anand Sadiq, who's right there. Look, I just said you. She's engineering this. She's very happy that I've now said her name on here. She's a student at UC Irvine. She's our KQED intern this summer. She's engineering this. She smiles every time we say Huda. Anyway.
Huda.
Okay, now what the heck was I talking about? I know where I was going. I wanted to talk about some of the politics of this to the general public, because the governor has taken a very strong position in public in his 60-second ad that he put out this week, which we can talk about in a moment. In all of his public pronouncements, I will not sign a budget that kicks the can down the alley. I will not sign a budget that is, you know, just pushes the problem. And my point here is that there is going to be a very difficult reckoning, I think, of whatever this document is with that kind of rhetoric. And this does get back, I think, into the cynicism of Californians about the process and about what happens here at the state capitol when they are told that a solution is a solution and it ain't a solution.
It's not. And look, whatever happens in the next couple of weeks here is not a solution. And I think that...
You've heard it here first.
And I think that, you know, you see the governor throwing things out there like pension reform, right? Creating a two-tiered pension system where...
Which he says now is not part of it, but...
Not for July.
Yeah.
But you know what? When we come back in 3 months, he's planting the seeds for this to be part of a discussion down the road. And I think that what you're looking at now is you've got a governor who sees the clock running. He's got 18 months left in office, and he's going to have three more budgets to deal with. I mean, if you talk to anybody, I mean, I'm sure you've heard the same thing that, October seems to be when people are talking, because we have such our revenues are so bad and the money coming into the state is trickling in so slowly that in a few months we're going to have to do this again. And so I think what has created a lot of the momentum is the sense that I get from talking to my Republican sources in the Capitol is that they've pushed the Democrats pretty much as far as they're going to go. They're going to get the education cuts. They're going to get not only the education cuts that the governor proposed in the May revision, they're going to get the additional $680 million. That's already been agreed to. As of today, right? That could all blow up tomorrow.
Right.
They're going to get a lot, and they know they're going to get another bite at the apple in a few months. Am I wrong?
No. It's just a gloomy assessment.
Well, it's a gloomy assessment if you want to write about anything other than the damn budget.
Yeah, exactly. If there was any chance to have anything else to tell the public. I just, again, I can't help but feel that, that the public cynicism with the process just grows every time, every one of these deals, every one of these proposals, everything that turns out, ah, you're being called.
Uh-oh.
Oh, it's an important source.
No.
But every one of these things, it just fuels that unhappiness that the public has out there.
Well, look, it's broken. It's broken, and it needs to be fixed, and it's not going to be fixed in the next 2 weeks.
And I can't help but mention that the part-time legislature initiative not only was cleared for circulation, but the campaign says they're ready to go, though they don't have all the funding in place maybe yet, and that's a key thing to get something on the ballot. But it won't take much, as we've said before, to spark in this kind of angry environment.
Right.
A couple of other things quickly. I mean, I did reference it a moment ago. The governor had this ad, the 60-second television ad that he put on the airwaves at the beginning of the week. Ominous, this like crescendo, as I wrote about, the crescendo of this ominous music. Well, I guess you're going to be doing it here.
The timpani drum rolling at the beginning. Anyway, you'll link to it on the.
No, let's play a little bit of it.
Okay.
You elected me to control spending in Sacramento. Not as a Republican or Democrat, but as a Californian. At times, it has proven to be a tough task, but now the stakes have never been higher. Californians are losing jobs, losing homes, and are worried about their children's future. And Sacramento is asking me to sign a budget that raises your taxes and spends money we do not have. I will not sign a budget with higher taxes that causes businesses to leave or more jobs to vanish. And I will not sign a budget that does not address the waste, fraud, and abuse in our government. And I will not sign a budget that pushes our financial problems down the road, because the road stops here. I'm standing firm for a balanced budget that does not raise your taxes. I'm asking you to stand firm with me. Stand for California.
So, I mean, this is an ad that's all the governor full screen the whole time, and it felt very much like the old recall ads to me. You know, I will not do this, and you sent me to do this, and right. Da-da-da. And I was struck by how difficult it's got to be for him to play that role as an insider for 6 years. You know, to try to play the role of the outsider reformer, I will not do all these things that Sacramento wants me to do. That's one of my favorite lines where he says, Sacramento wants me to raise taxes, which is just vague enough to be anybody he wants it to be. Democrats? Sure. Right. Labor unions? Sure. I don't know.
People at the Hyatt? Sure. No.
But the ad just felt like a tough case to make, a tough needle to thread, a tough something for him to make with the public. I'm not talking about inside the building, now talking about outside around
California. Did anybody see these ads? I mean, the governor responded because the service union,
well, the
service
CTA
employees
before,
union,
yeah, right.
and then the teachers union
right.
had hit him with ads, and he right. felt finally provoked to respond, right? And so the lawyers and the political consultants got together, said, you have to do something, everybody gets paid, and he's back on the air. I'm not sure this has any impact in the real world. I just, you know.
I'm not saying it has a major impact in the real world. I go again to what the public thinks of him and their perception of him, the perception of what he's doing, the perception of the job. And I have been a little bit focused on it this week, I have to admit, because I had a piece that ran as part of this massive NPR series, California in Crisis.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it was a piece about the governor's legacy to date. And I have to be careful to say it wasn't a piece about his legacy because he still has – you know, almost a year and a half in office. But, you know, when you talk to people who have been involved around this administration for the last 6 years, you get the sense that some of this was out of his control. Some of it was him, you know, but some of it was him underestimating the power of this place and the way this place works. And then some of it was, this overestimation of how much he could change it himself.
Right.
You know, and I guess those are really two sides of the same coin. But,
or three.
but even a person who was a close advisor of him saying, you know, that it's not all his fault, but, you know, there were some things that didn't feel like they were as sharp a focus as they needed to be.
And 2005. So 2005.
Well, and so I just wonder where this is all going to go. I mean, you know, this is, again, at the end of the day, the public has some role. They do elect these people. I mean, I have a trouble with people who say that, you know, well, the public doesn't have any role, the districts are skewed, and the, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I'd hate to be like a big civic guy here, but you know, the public does have a role, whether it's statewide offices or legislative offices, and they're just so pissed off right now.
Well, and that's the thing is the fixes. I mean, look, you talk to anybody about what the problems are. I think there's an increasing consensus, a increasing bipartisan consensus that term limits is part of the problem, right? That you have people up here who don't have relationships with each other. They're too busy running for their next office. They don't have the policy background, the historical background. It's just that's part of the problem. Well, guess what? Guess how we got term limits? We got it from the voters in 1990. And so when you talk about the part-time legislature, I mean, sure, it feels good.
Oh, of course, right.
You know, it's real easy and good to point a finger and blame, but is that really going to – I mean, are we 4 years from now on this podcast going to be talking about
– We're
going to
be here in 4 years?
Hey, look, the legislature's coming to town for their biennial three-month session, and look at all these out-of-control bureaucrats. I mean, I just – you know, if you pause and you take a deep breath and you think about it, I mean – is the part-time legislature going to help this problem? And that's, I think that's the real danger with when you allow cynicism to reach such a fever pitch here, which is sort of where we are, is that people are going to want to take the easy way out, do the thing that feels good and is easiest to sort of vent your anger, but might not be the most civically prudent. And I'm not editorializing against a part-time legislature. I'm just saying that, you know, if knee-jerk reactions are and ballot box budgeting and all the rest is part of what got us into this mess, is a part-time legislature, which is conceived in a similar vein, is that really what's going to get us out? I mean, is that really going to help? And you know, I mean, look, the part-time legislature is ephemeral now. We'll be talking about this more in the next few months as the signature gathering continues. But I think that there is a larger civic discussion that needs to take place. And I think this is what the proponents of a constitutional convention are talking about. And, you know, I'm not sure it has to be a constitutional convention per se, but I do think that there needs to be a more complete understanding of what's going on up here. And look, I mean, just last week we lost another reporter. I mean, Jake Henshaw, who's been up here with Gannett
22 years.
Yeah, he's been up here for 22 years with Gannett for 35. I mean, when you lose and he's not being replaced, right. And Jake writes for what 8, 9, 10
different
newspapers.
We lost him because he was laid off. We should say that.
Right. He didn't fall into the Grand Canyon or anything.
Right.
And that, I mean, the consequence of that is that people are more disconnected from their government, you know? Right. Am I on my soapbox?
No, you're
going
good.
On here?
You're good. No,
I'm going to get off now.
I was going to let you whine completely like those little rabbits that you crank the little thing and then it goes...
I'm going to breathe off mic like the guy that sang Chocolate Rain.
All right, with that.
And
a program note that feels somewhat related to some of that, which is that there won't be a podcast next week because yours truly, the podcast originator, not to say that you're not the not to say that you're not my co-colleague conspirator.
Okay.
Here.
I can be Robin. That's fine.
But yours truly is in a furlough week next week. No week without pay to help solve part of KQED's budget problems. So, with that, we probably will miss next week, unless for some reason they bring me back because all kinds of fun stuff happens. So don't be surprised if there's no podcast next week, but we will – I was going to say we'll be back, and then I felt like I was going to do an Arnold impersonation, and it was just going to go nowhere.
Hey, maybe you can splice the tape in here where he says, I'll be back.
No, not this time.
You're going to let me do that.
Yeah, right.
Thanks.
I'm letting you take that one all the way out. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We will see you next time.